transparent backpacks, locked doors, and additional security guards. The new normal at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Broward County Superintendent of Schools Robert Runcie says they're taking all threats seriously after February's mass shooting, including a prank threat that a student made recently on social media.
This is no joke. That student was arrested. It is now a felony and will result in an arrest and a prosecution to the fullest extent of the law.
Plus, the new student activism inspired by Parkland. We talked to students who are organizing a youth leadership summit this weekend. They're expecting hundreds of participants from all over South Florida. Finally, Poetry Month is in full swing, and O Miami is giving you an opportunity to meet local poets and to be one yourself. That's all coming up today on Sundial. First, the news. Welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for listening. Well, this week when students at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High arrived at class, they were given clear backpacks. It's one of the new security measures at the school. There was some pushback because people being able to see what you keep in your backpack, well, pretty much takes away your privacy. We spoke with Superintendent Robert Runcie last night about his decision to go to the backpacks and about what other security measures he's considering for the future.
We hear from both sides, right? We hear from folks that have been, they're very inconvenienced. They don't like them. It does put, it has an impact on privacy. And then there are others that want as many security measures as possible and welcome it. We went into this through consultation with the administration at the school, and it's something we've implemented among a host of other measures. And I will continue to remind people that this is not a permanent solution. It's a part of a series of steps that we're going to be taking. So, yes, we have the clear backpacks now. We're going to be moving to wanding and possibly even metal detectors, but we're going to be moving to metal detecting wands as the next phase, and we'll probably try to get that in within a couple of weeks. And we'll see how that goes, and that may create an opportunity for us to relax the need for the clear backpacks. And then, we may look at transitioning to metal detectors. So, we're going to try a number of measures to ensure that we're providing the maximum type of security possible at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas.
Now, this is only for Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. Is there any consideration that this may be for all schools?
Yeah, so ultimately what we will do is to create a standard for all schools across Broward County. Our pathway to do that is through a district-wide security risk assessment, which we will start shortly and complete by this summer. And then we will have community conversations around it, conversations with our school board, and then we'll come to some prioritization and consensus of what type of security measures we want across our schools and do that in a consistent and equitable way across the entire county. We can look at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas as a way for us to try out some of the things that we know are available out there to see how they may work. But ultimately, through the security risk assessment, we will be able to make some more informed decisions in terms of what we will do on a long-term basis. That is going to put the district also in a position to be able to go after the $98 million that have been allocated by the state to help support districts with physical security enhancements. That is a competitive grant that the state will have applications submitted in December of 2018, and it is my understanding that they will make awards and announcements for that competitive grant sometime in the first quarter of 2019. So we don't really have those funds now, but again, these are things that we could do.
I'm wondering for you personally, as the superintendent, you want to keep the school safe. You want to keep the students and the staff safe. But for you, where's the line? Where do you say, okay, I don't want to turn this into a prison block. I don't want to turn this into some kind of fortress. It still has to be a school, and it still has to have an environment, an atmosphere where people feel like they feel safe, but are there to learn and to at least be with their friends. But for you personally, where do you find that line?
Well, you know, I've said that from the very beginning, that this is going to be a balancing act. And it's, you know, we're going to have to work with the school administration, get feedback from students and community to figure out what that balance is. You know, I have my thoughts around what that may be, but it also needs to be what the community feels comfortable with. And within Broward County, believe it or not, that perspective is going to vary from community to community in terms of what that may look like. And we need to come to some kind of consensus where we're, you know, able to recognize that whatever we do is not going to be perfect. It's going to create some inconveniences for some, and it's probably going to may have more security measures than others would prefer. For some, many, they may say it doesn't go far enough. But at the end of the day, I think we have to strike a balance. We know that we need to do more than where we are today, just given the world we live in, unfortunately. It's one where we have to do more diligence. But let me say this, that the most effective thing we can do, and I sit down with our students regularly. I met with a number of them on Monday and asked how things were going on in schools, not just Stoneman Douglas. And it was interesting how they all commented on how they've seen significantly enhanced security measures in their schools. Just exercising protocols that we already have in place. They'll make sure that all doors to all buildings and classrooms are locked, that students are wearing their identification badges on campuses at all time, that all the gates are locked and monitored. We're really stressing that across our entire system and working to change habits and behaviors and our culture around security. And that's probably the most effective thing that we can do. The other thing I would say to you is that we continue to see pranks and people calling in particular with social media threats. We had one the other day, which we take all of them seriously. Our police department, which we call our school investigative unit, worked with local law enforcement agencies. They visited the home of a student, which we traced it to, and that student admitted to making the post as a joke. What I would say to all students, this is no joke. That student was arrested. It's not a joking matter. It is now a felony and will result in an arrest and a prosecution to the fullest extent of the law, and will not be tolerated. So I'd say to all our parents out there and guardians, have conversations with these kids to let them know that, you know, these kind of pranks and joking, it's off limits in this day and age, and it will result in some serious consequences.
Two other quick things I wanted to ask you. You talk about the security around the campus. This is Marjorie Stoneman Douglas was a very big campus. So you sort of mentioned it. You're talking about locking doors, closing gates. In other words, limiting access to the campus, right?
Well, it's not only limiting access to the campus when the school's in session. It is also ensuring that movement around the campus is done in a way that's safe and creates security measures within the campus itself once you're in there.
The other thing, too, is parents would probably want to know, are their kids safe now? You talk about pranks, but there was a story recently about another sheriff deputy caught sleeping. Now, the legislature has passed for more money for resource officers, but what do you tell parents right now? Are their kids safe? Is there enough security?
Yes, your kids are safe. Go into our schools, you know, one of the safest places for, you know, our kids to be. And, you know, that was an unfortunate situation that occurred. Subsequent to that, the state, through the governor, has agreed to provide additional law enforcement officers at the Stoneman Douglas site to ensure that we can properly man gates. But the overall piece with school resource officers, I would say a couple things. One, school resource officers in general, overall, overwhelming majority of them in Broward County, my experience has been doing an outstanding job. They've developed good relationships in the school. They're doing what we've hired them to do. Going forward, as we look at this role, We're going to be pretty explicit in the contracts that we have with the sheriff's office and local law enforcement agencies in terms of the criteria. We want the very best people to be on our campuses. We want to ensure they're well-trained and that they're very clear expectations of what that role involves and what kind of responses we expect them to have relative to potential threats or threats that may ever come on a campus. So we're going to work through that and make sure that these are highly coveted jobs that people want and taking them very seriously. I consider this the most important law enforcement position that we have in Broward County. That's protecting the lives of our precious young people and our teachers and administrators that are working on these campuses.
And besides the security, I mean, there's always been the question of, do schools have enough counselors? Do you have enough people who can work with students and maybe help them and get to them before they ever even consider doing anything like this?
I would tell you that there's a national shortage on counselors. We have our own challenges here in Broward County that there hasn't been sufficient funding for them. We've been saying that for years. Unfortunately, it took this particular tragedy for the state to allocate additional funding for counselors. Broward County is expecting to receive an additional $6 million. We're already in the process of hiring additional counselors right now. In the Stoneman-Douglas zone, we continue to have therapists and counselors there. Literally about 20% of the district's entire counseling capacity has been dedicated to the Stoneman-Douglas zone, and they're still out there. The Resiliency Center still remains open, but we have counselors on site at the high school, the middle school, and some of the feeder, the elementary schools as well. And some of the additional resources that we're going to hire, we're going to be placing them permanently out there in that region as well, so we can continue to provide support to the students, the staff, and the families.
Let me finish with this, Superintendent Runcie. You know, you've been in education long enough that you've seen these stories in the news throughout the country. Sadly, it's the new normal in our society. But how has your life, how has the way you approach your job changed now that, sadly, this tragedy has occurred in your district at one of your schools?
You know, it's really taken on so many dimensions. We've had consultations with Sandy Hook administrators and parents. We've had representatives from Columbine in here and other mass tragedies. And, you know, one of the takeaways for us is that this is a long-term recovery process. And there are lots of residual things that are going to continue to occur as an impact on the Stoneman-Douglas community. It reverberates throughout the entire county. And in some ways, it's really, for me personally, turned into almost two jobs. I've got to continue to focus on the mission of public education, making sure that our kids are getting a quality education, that we continue to improve graduation rates, close achievement gaps, make sure our ESE students continue to get the kind of supports and services they need, and then at the same time deal with the impact that this tragedy has had on the district, all the way from Stoneman-Douglas in Parkland to Fort Lauderdale to Pompano to Hollywood. It reverberates around the district and at a national level. So we'll never be the same, and we're going to have to readjust in everything that we do.
Superintendent Runcie, I really appreciate your time today. Thank you so much, sir.
All right, thank you.
And again, that was Broward County School Superintendent Robert Runcie. He spoke to us from his school district office yesterday. And I wanted to know from you, how do you feel about these sorts of security measures, the clear backpacks? And he, as he said, maybe at some point they're going to bring in metal detectors, closing and locking a lot of different doors, closing access points to the school. How do you feel? Is that going to make the school safer, or do you think there's a line? You can find us on Facebook, WLRN Sundial. There's a post there. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Well, still to come, we're going to take a closer look at this youth activism that is growing in the wake of the Parkland shooting. That's all next on Sundial here on WLRN. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, this weekend, politically active students from across South Florida will gather for a Young Leaders Summit. Organizers hope as many as 500 students will attend, inspired by the recent marches after the Parkland shootings. Three of those organizers are with me in the studio now. Nikita Leos Oliva, a junior at Coral Gables High School. Will Breslin is a senior at Gables. And Chris Badillo, a sophomore at Coral Reef High School. Nikita, Will, Chris, it's such a pleasure to have you here. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
It's nice to be here.
All right, so I'm going to go around the table, and I want to ask each of you, I want to get a sense of when exactly did you become, socially and politically active? When did this become important to you? Chris, I'm going to start with you.
Politics has always been something important to me, and I think middle school was really when I became more socially aware, starting with civics. That was the class that sparked my interest in politics, and it's something that's continued every day in my life up to now, and it's something that I intend to continue into the future.
Is it at home, by the way? Is politics something that's discussed a lot?
Every day.
Every day. Okay. Nikita, how about you? When did it start for you? How did it start for you?
So Chris and I actually went to the same middle school. I actually also became more politically aware in my seventh grade civics class, and ever since then I've wanted to be a lawyer, study political science, but I really got involved during the Hillary Clinton campaign. I saw Donald Trump spitting hate at immigrants, and it felt really awful because my parents are both immigrants, and I see all the work that they put in and all the sacrifices that they've made and how they help our community directly. So I felt like Donald Trump was just kind of throwing away all the sacrifices that they've made and all the amazing things that they've done. And I wasn't going to put up with that. So I became a fellow during the Hillary Clinton campaign and actually organized three events completely on my own for high school students. So it's not my first time organizing for high school students.
But it was, you said it goes back to middle school, and you were in the same class with Chris?
No, we were in a different class because I'm a year older than him.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Okay.
But yeah, Carver had great civics classes.
Oh, so that civics class must have been something. And I mean, it really got you involved. Okay. All right. Well, Will, let me ask you, what about you? When did it start for you? Why?
So for me, it's more of a two-part kind of thing. So in 08, when President Obama first ran, I remember clearly going and canvassing with my dad, and that was kind of the first taste I had of kind of grassroots organizing. And then flash forward 8 years, the 2016 campaign kind of left me, I don't want to say depressed, but kind of disappointed in myself and in the result. I chose not to get involved because I thought the result was clear, and I really didn't see this kind of result coming. But then after the election, I really regretted not getting involved. So at my school in Philadelphia, St. Joe's Prep, we got a Prep Dems Club started with the idea of giving students who were of the more progressive mindset a chance to kind of express their thoughts and just have a clear conversation with people who thought similarly to them. And then when I got back to Miami after my junior year, Nikita and I started a Miami-Dade Teen Democrats Club with the intention of getting teenagers involved and engaged in their community, and it's grown significantly. I think we're 85 registered members. We have 25 students at our meetings every month. We host phone banks and all that kind of stuff, and now we're kind of shifting our focus towards 2018 to kind of battle everything that's been going on.
And by the way, there's something unique about the election. Is it this year? Will all of you be able to vote? No.
I won't.
Okay.
I won't either.
I'm registered, though.
Okay. So by 2020, though,
yes, you
will.
2020, I'm voting.
There you go.
Yes.
All right. The other thing, too, by the way, because, Will, you were talking about you had formed this group. Is this the regional political club that you guys had put together?
Yeah. So the Miami-Dade Team Democrat is a county-wide kind of club. So we have students from, I think, half a dozen different high schools or more at this point. And we get together once a month and talk about everything that's gone on over the course of the previous month and organize stuff like phone banks and canvassing for candidates in our area. We've worked three campaigns so far. We've won one of them, but you can't win them all. But yeah, we're really excited about what we can do for 2018.
And Nikita, did at any point did you have adults come in and try to help guide the club in any direction, or is this just all you guys?
We're actually really proud of the fact that we've organized it and set it up completely on our own. I can't say that it wasn't without the guidance of some adults. We definitely had tons of meetings and asked for guidance from a lot of people. But even now, we were asked several times actually to register an adult sponsor. And every time we said no, we want this to be run entirely by high school students, which is what it's been and what we hope it will continue to be.
All right. So I wanted to ask you guys, because you started all of this way before we talked about youth activism with the Parkland shooting. This is way before all of that. But let me come up back over here, Chris. I'm going to start with you. I wanted to get a sense of, not your initial response to the shooting, but everything that's happened since and really, taking this activism, where were you? Where did you want to go with it?
Where do I want to go with it?
Yeah.
Straight to the Capitol. Mm-hmm. I want our representatives, the people who are elected to represent us, to hear us, to know that just because not all of us can vote as high school students, that we still matter. And that's what I really think is so important about this movement. It showcases to our representatives, to our congressmen, to our president, that they need to listen. Because we are the future of this country, and if they don't listen, they're not going to be in office for much longer.
Do you guys think that anybody's listening to you right now? I mean, come on. There have been marches. There are groups forming now everywhere. This is gaining steam nationally. But, do you think people are listening? Do you think the adults are listening? Do you think?
I think there's a lot of adults who are listening. It's just the ones who don't listen and the ones who publicly choose to defy us and to kind of discard our opinions stand out a lot more, just because we are such a powerful future voting bloc. Like you said, in the next 4 years, every single current high school student will be voting. So our opinions right now aren't going to change in the next 4 years. People like us are going to make sure that all of our peers and all of our classmates and all of our teachers and our parents make sure that this still matters in 4 years. So for those who aren't listening to us, we are going to make sure that that they're voted out. So I do think there are some people who are listening to us. We just need more of it.
All right. Now, you say that in 4 years, every high school student now can vote. Mm-hmm. Do you think they will? Will, do you think that they are going to?
I think that's going to be the biggest difference between what we've seen in the past and what we're going to see in 2 and 4 years. I think there's going to be such a national movement to get young people engaged and young people to the polls that we're going to see unprecedented number of 18 to 25-year-olds voting. I think right now we make up like 4% of the vote in terms of voters, but a much larger number of total people who are available to vote. So if we drive up that number and double it or triple it, then the results are going to change dramatically.
But if I'm not mistaken, by the way, one of the things that this club did, this group did after the shootings in Parkland was to call a meeting, right? Did you guys have a meeting right after the shooting?
We did, yes.
Okay, so what happened at that meeting?
So we start every single one of our meetings with an open floor, just kind of talking about current events. So after everything that was happening with DACA, we had a huge conversation about immigration, and the Parkland shooting wasn't any different. It was just a lot more personal. We had club members who had been personally affected by gun violence. A lot of us, my school personally, Gables, is less than 50 miles away from Parkland. So it was a different meeting and there was a different vibe in that a lot of people took it very personally. It was something that was scary for all of us. I think it was definitely very real that it could have been our school, that it still can be our school. So we spoke, we had a very long and productive conversation about what had happened, about what we can do about it. And actually, that same meeting, we had someone come in and teach us how to do voter registration, which Will and I both already knew how to do, but a lot of our club members didn't. So so that's what happened at that meeting.
If I can piggyback off of that, at that meeting, I know Nikita and I felt this way, but after the shooting, there was kind of a general, what do we do? There's Nikki and I are very confident in what we choose to do with our like our time and how we dedicate our time towards these goals. And after that, it was a massive confusion of what are we supposed to do? How are we supposed to feel? Like, what do we do in response to this? How do we get these people engaged? And that feeling of not knowing is scary in and of itself.
Again, we're having a conversation with a group of high school students here in South Florida who are part of a unique club. They formed, it's a political, social club that they have formed way before the Parkland shooting, by the way. And there are a couple events coming up that we're going to ask them about here. But I'm speaking with Nikita Leos Oliva, again, a junior at Coral Gables High School. Will Breslin is a senior at Gables. And Chris Badillo is a sophomore at Coral Reef High School. Let's talk about, because we had a couple of things. One, I mentioned that you guys have, there's a Young Leader Summit coming. But Will, you were also telling me you have a town hall that's happening as well. So I want to make sure that we get the different events correct. What do we have coming on first?
So tonight actually is the town hall. It'll be made up of community members from Congressional District 26. We got this planning started last week, and we invited Congressman Corbello to attend. He was unable to because of a prior commitment. So what we're doing instead is inviting his Democratic opposition. So that makes up Debbie Mucarcel Powell, Steve Machat, and Demetrius Grimes. So they will all be there tonight talking to the community members, answering questions, having an honest conversation with their future constituents or potential future constituents.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, come back, and talk about this the summit that's coming up. Something unique, too, about this summit is really who's invited and who's coming. A lot of people expected to the summit that's coming up again in just a few days. But we're going to have more on this conversation here in just a moment here on Sundial on WLRN. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. And again, I'm speaking with a group of high school students right now about a Young Leaders Summit, and that is coming up this weekend. They are expecting hundreds of students to attend, coming from all over South Florida, maybe even other parts as well. And again, so much of this inspired by the recent marches that we saw after the Parkland shootings. I wanted to ask you guys, speaking about this this summit, and we'll get some details on the event itself, but you guys had decided early on that you wanted this summit to be bipartisan, right? Why, Nikita?
So I think the only way for change to actually come about is if it is bipartisan. So the importance of this being bipartisan is that it can't be just one party championing gun reform. It has to come from both sides, and both sides have to understand that it's literally our lives at stake. So we need the support of everyone, regardless of party.
And Chris, do you think it's going to be bipartisan? Do you think you'll get a good mix?
Yeah, I really do think so. I just want to piggyback off of what Nikita said. It is so important that this summit is nonpartisan like it is, just because it shows that this issue doesn't just affect Democrats, and it doesn't just affect Republicans, and it doesn't just affect independents. It's something that students across the political aisle deal with, and that's why it's so important that this summit is nonpartisan, and it will be this Saturday.
And let me ask you, though, on a personal level, all of you, is, you know, how many of your classmates have different viewpoints than you? And I'm just wondering what they tell you. What do they think about this pushback on guns, the push to have more restrictions on guns, and again to push on, you know, against the NRA? But when you talk to your friends who are perhaps way more right than you are, what are they saying? And are you really talking to each other? Are you guys really are you having conversations?
Go ahead, Chris.
I can personally say that I do have many conservative friends. And something that I've noticed across my conservative friends is that dividing them up, not many of them are actually against the gun reform that we're pushing. You'll have a select few, a very small minority, who are against increased background checks, who are against the semi-automatic rifle ban. But it's not a large number, at least not in my experience, not at Coral Reef Senior High School.
And what did they say about all these marches? What did they say about, you know, the especially when you look at the students from Marjory Stoneman Douglas who have been in the news all the time? What do they think about all this?
They disagree with what they're trying to say with the message, but they don't necessarily disagree with the actions. And what I mean by that is the idea of students being able to speak out for something they believe in is something that all students believe in. It's something that all students hold dear, that idea that we still have our freedom of speech, that we still have the ability to be heard in our government. So at least in that aspect, it doesn't divide the people at my school. It doesn't divide my friends. It doesn't divide my classmates. It's something that we all hold near and dear to our hearts.
And Will, I'm wondering at this summit, and Nikita, please jump in as well, but at this summit, you know, is there going to be an opportunity for people who may hold a different view to be able to stand up and say, wait a second, I see it differently?
Well, the summit is more for people to learn. So if the overall goal is for people to go there and learn the skills needed to carry on a movement like this, but if there is someone who disagrees, this isn't going to be the place for them to publicly disagree. This is going to be a time for them to listen to what other people have to say. And I think that's what we're missing from our democracy right now, is taking a second to listen to what the other side has. And I think that's a result of the growing rift that we have between the two sides and how we choose to never listen to the other side. And
yeah, you know what, Nikita, you see it in us grown-ups. We don't talk to each other. We don't listen to each other. Well, I mean, I'm generalizing. But your generation, you guys, are you listening to each other?
So kind of piggybacking on what both Will and Chris said, I think a huge issue, not only amongst teenagers, among the entire American public, is education. So a lot of people aren't educated in that they think that this movement is to take away all guns, and to all these radical things that aren't legal. The Second Amendment does exist, and it's probably not going to get repealed anytime soon. So no one is going to take everyone's guns away. We just are fighting for more restrictions to prevent another shooting from happening, to literally save our lives. So I do think that because our generation is a lot more impacted by our peers, we are more willing to listen. I always say nothing inspires students like other students, which is the main reason I think why so many students are getting active. They're seeing the Parkland students taking a stand and getting active, and they're inspired to follow suit. So I think students in our generation are a lot more willing to listen to each other, maybe not as willing to listen to their parents or other adults. But I do think that our generation is special and that we have a special impact on each other. And yeah.
You know, you hear it in the media. And I think, I mean, I know I say this as an older guy when I talk to any of my friends. But you'll hear from time to time, we say there's something about this group of young people and their energy. And, you know, and then we throw that word around a lot. There's a lot more activism. They're just more involved. Again, it's a generalization, but are we getting it right?
Yeah, we've made it cool to be involved. I think a lot of our, I mean, we're even getting involved in school. So I think our generation has, like I said, made it cool to get involved, to be active, to vote. So I think that's different from past generations. Like, I know my dad was like, oh, I have to go to the voting booth. I have to get out of my house and drive over there and wait in line. And our generation is just kind of like trying to shift that attitude. And make it cool to be involved, to participate in politics. And I think it is a duty that we all have and that we should all use.
Chris, I'm trying to remember what high school was like. It was so long ago now. But, yeah, I don't remember talking politics that much. How often do you and your friends talk about politics? Talk about social issues and things like that.
Every day.
Every day?
It's something that comes up a lot. If it is in class where we have a very civil debate about the political issues of our time, or if it's during lunch, there is a lot of awareness amongst the youth.
Do you guys have debates? Or do you, again, it goes back to what I said a second ago, is are you talking to each other? Do you talk to people who have a different viewpoint than you? Maybe it's a very strong different viewpoint than yours, but are you talking to each other?
Of course. I feel like the most important part of education is civil discourse, the ability to learn how to talk to someone with a different view. And it's something that I always try to do. I always try to talk to people who may not see eye to eye with me, but there's always something you can learn. Always. It doesn't matter who it's coming from. There's always something that you can draw. And it's something that I see a lot more at high school now.
Will, this, again, the Young Leader Summit that's coming up, this is, again, April 7th. It's 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and just to mention, by the way, and we will put this up on our Facebook, it's at the MDC Kendall campus. So we'll make sure that we get the address and times up online. But I was mentioning earlier, you guys are expecting a lot of people. What have you been hearing?
In terms of what?
Of attendance. Who's coming?
So one of the really cool things that we have going on is a civic engagement fair during lunch. So we're going to have organizations from all across the county and candidates for elected office from all over the county there, kind of telling the students what their platform is and trying to get students to volunteer and get them civically engaged, whether it be on a campaign or working for a nonprofit or anything like that. And then in terms of students, we're expecting over 500 students. I think we had a kind of optimistic goal of 1,000. So maybe you guys can help us with that. But yeah, whatever number of students we get, we're looking forward to having them there and kind of training them on such a wide variety of things. And then in terms of kind of professors and instructors for the breakout sessions, we have people from all over the county. I want to say the best in their field. We have people from the Harvard Kennedy School coming, people from Resistance School coming, people from
Dream Defenders,
Indivisible, just a bunch of really, really neat people who are trying to fight for a more just, safer kind of world.
And Nikita, real quick, just to wrap up, is, you know, if you're telling somebody who wants to, they want to get an idea of what to expect. I mean, Will just laid out a lot of people are going to be there, but what are you telling people about, look, why you should go? What's going to happen?
So the Young Leader Summit is really to teach people how to organize, how to strategize, how to mobilize, and how to really make this movement mean something to actually enact change. We don't want it to just be marches and hashtags and videos. We want to see actual legislation through. So we want to teach everyone there how to get that done. And we want to get them involved. Like Will said, at our civic engagement fair, there will be tons of opportunities for people to get involved. We actually are lucky enough, we're going to be hearing from the students that organized the Parkland March for Our Lives and from Jacqueline Corrin, who is one of the founders of the Never Again movement. So that's awesome. And we're going to hear from their personal perspectives how everything has gone, which is really cool because, like I said, nothing inspires students like other students. So I think that pretty much sums it up. If anyone wants to sign up, they can do so at youngleaderssummit.org. It should be really cool. We're providing free lunch, free t-shirts, community service hours. So it should be a really cool event. We also want students to be able to connect with one another. We think the best way for change to be enacted is for other students to do it together. So it should be a really cool time.
All right. Again, I've been talking with Nikita Leos-Oliva, a junior at Coral Gables High School, Will Breslin, a senior at Gables, and Chris Badillo, a sophomore at Coral Reef High School. Again, it's the Young Leader Summit. It's April 7th, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at the MDC Kendall campus. Again, we'll put some information up on our Facebook page this afternoon so you can check it out as well. Chris, Will, Nikita, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much for having us.
All right. Still to come, it is Poetry Month, and we've got Oh Miami in the house. That's next on Sundial here on WLRN. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez.
I fell in love with the idea of rhyme. So, of course, I started writing all my feelings out, and I had a lot of feelings, so in rhyme format, and that became the quote-unquote poem.
It is Poetry Month and a busy time for Oh Miami. A lot of fun time, too. That, by the way, was Caridad Moro. She's a poet here in Miami. Oh Miami's organized events throughout the city, and this one was one last night at the Doral Branch Library called Check Out a Poet. And that in of itself is cool, and we're going to find out what that's all about. The idea, of course, is kind of like a library. I'll let you figure that out. We're joined now by Scott Cunningham, founder of Oh Miami, a literary organization here in South Florida. Scott, great to have you here on the show finally.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And happy Poetry Month. Is that the right way to say it?
That's one way to say it.
Okay,
yeah,
perfect.
Works.
Perfect. you know what, just real quickly for people, you started this, was it now 2011, right?
That was the first festival, 2011, yep.
What was going, I mean, at the time, and I wonder, like, how much has changed in just 7 years, but, you know, the what was going on? Why'd you want to do it?
Well, I think it came out of a desire to be even more connected to Miami. I mean, first and foremost, I got the opportunity to do it only because the Jonathan James L. Knight Foundation made it possible for me. And I was kind of inspired by what they were doing with Random Acts of Culture, where they were trying to take art and take it out of performing arts centers and other places in the name of accessibility and democratizing the art form. And I had been organizing poetry events for a couple of years on a grassroots level, and I felt like I kind of knew the 50 to 100 people who might show up to one of those at that point. And so when they gave me this opportunity to do a whole festival, I said, well, I have this feeling that more than 100 people care about this genre, and let's figure out if that's true. And so that's how we came up with this format of doing a whole month with the goal of every single person in Miami encountering a poem.
And you have all these different events that you do, you know, so you have the one like the Checkout. So what is the Checkout a Poet?
So Checkout a Poet is based on the idea of the human library, which has been done in other places. And the idea is, instead of checking out a book, you check out a person. And so here in Miami at various branches throughout the month, you can check out a poet. And so for 15 minutes, you can sit down with them, have them read to you, do your taxes, you know, whatever you need.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know if I want a poet doing my taxes.
You don't. But,
all right. You know what? I mean, because you're setting these up, and you have – I was going through the list of all the different events. By the way, I just have to say there is one that's, you know, for those who are lovers of Game of Thrones, you have an event for that.
We do. So this is the third year in a row we've done Day of Thrones.
Okay.
And it was the name was originally inspired because the first year we did it, it was the same day as the new season was coming out.
There you go.
And so it's a competition that combines sort of like, you know, brains and brawn. And we do it with the Nootropic. And it's a lot of fun. You can come out to Pace Park. And you do some sort of nerdy games, but also some more brawny games.
You know what? I mean, when you're setting these up, I mean, to set up all of the events for the month of April, I mean, when do you start?
We start on May 1st or sometimes earlier.
So when this is over, you're already getting ready for next year.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a couple things we're already working on for next year. Yeah.
How much has it changed? I mean, you made the joke earlier about, you know, how many people would get involved. But really, a lot of people get involved in these things.
It's crazy. It's really amazing. And I think it's a testament to just how great Miami is and how just kind of down for whatever people in Miami are. And thirsty for, I think, cultural experiences that are inclusive and that meet them halfway and engage them as creators. I mean, a lot of people ask us, you know, how do you do this whole month? You know, there's only two full-time people on staff, and it's, well, we do it in collaboration with everybody. And that's the biggest difference I see from the first year, is that even though we did a lot in the first year, the level of engagement, I mean, is just like exponential from then to now in terms of people who know about it, people who participate in things like Zippo'd and other engagements that we do. It's wild.
I've asked you this before, but I'm always curious to hear from artists who are from here. You're a product of the education here. Mm-hmm. Is, you know, what is the scene like in Miami for writers and poets?
I think it's great. I mean, you know, I think the most important, there are two really important things for a writer, I think. One is inspiration. And I think that Miami has more things to write about than any place on earth, probably.
For a newspaper writer, there's a lot to write about. That is true.
But I think for a poet, too. I mean, I just, there's such an unbelievable confluence of cultures here and people. And so I think that's a real boon for a poet who's constantly looking for new things in the world to inspire them. And then, you know, secondly, I think you need community. And I think that's something that also I see increasing exponentially every single year as I see more and more young people starting their own literary initiatives, whether it's a reading series or a small press or a zine. That activity, I think, has exploded since I started doing this, and that's the best thing to see.
All right. What other events do you have coming up for folks? Again, this is Poetry Month, so there's plenty to do from now through the end of the month, but what does O Miami have in store?
So this Friday, we have something for the whole family called Poetry in Pajamas. So you're invited to bring the whole family to Miami Beach Botanical Garden on Friday at 6 p.m. Come in your pajamas if you wish, or whatever you interpret as evening wear. You know, it's a family event. So And it's an open mic, so kids can read their poems on a stage that's sort of shaped like a bed. It should be a lot of fun.
I've been wanting to do, you know, my show in my pajamas, but anyway, I wanted to come back to this to the Check Out a Poet event. So, sure. You know, we heard from a poet at the event yesterday, Garidat Moto, and you know, we were just chatting with her a little bit about you know, really that process of creating poetry and why it's so important to her. Here's what she had to say.
It is a little scary to put your truth out as you see it, because not everyone is going to be on the same page with you. No pun intended. But I found that that's never been a drawback. People are very eager to understand, to connect with you. And the more I put my work out there, and the scarier the poem is for me to read, funny enough, it's the most effective poems.
You know what, Scott? I was curious also about, for you, I've always loved your take on this, is, you know, why poetry? Because as you said, you're right. Miami has so much to offer. The other part of that joke I was going to say is that it's also a great place for anybody who's writing like mystery thrillers and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
But for poets, I mean, for you, what is the allure of poetry?
Well, I think Kari put it pretty well. I mean, I think it's that it's a place where you can get past the surface things. I mean, it's a place where the more you take risks and the more that you try and really explore yourself and ask questions that maybe you're afraid to ask, the better it gets. So, and it's also an easy way to do that. I mean, if you can think, you can write a poem. So there's, you know, you don't have to rent film equipment or anything like that. You can just do it.
Yeah, I've tried. No, no, I cannot just do it. I'm sorry, you're wrong. You know what? I have to get to another great thing that we've done with you guys. It was highly successful in the past, is Zipodes.
Mm-hmm.
That's been a lot of fun, and it's back. And so just remind people what Zipodes are.
Sure. So Zipode is a form we invented with WLRN, and it's an ode to your particular zip code. So wherever you live, you have a numerical designation that in and of itself is perhaps not poetic, and your job is to make it poetic by writing a poem in the form of your zip code. So you can write your zip code down the left-hand side of the page. Mine is 33137. So that becomes the form of my zip ode. So in the first line, three words, one word, three words, seven words, and that's my five-line poem.
All right. Again, we haven't done this. It's been a couple of years. The last time it was 2016, and we had an event hosted by Kampong. It was in Coconut Grove, and here were some of the folks who shared their zip odes.
My name is Carmen Mise. I am from 33126. Oh, Miami, you have stolen my heart as well as my sanity, but you are forgiven with every sunrise.
I live in Hollywood, 33021. Lawn guys blow. Leaves one side to the other.
My name is Yvette Lelaurier. I am from Brickell. My zip code is 33131. Cranes, cranes, cranes. All I see, cranes. Not the bird, cranes.
Hi, my name is Patrick Cox. I'm originally from Alabama. I'm currently living in Coconut Grove, so 33133. Why did Peacock cross the road? Never mind, not crossing it lives on it.
My name is Francis Mora, and I live in zip code 33030, which is Homestead. So here it is, short and sweet. I love Homestead. In its stead, there is none.
And, you know, I just want to mention that we're still taking submissions. So if you'd like, you could submit your zip ode by April 20th, and you'll have a chance to perhaps read your zip ode at WLRN and O Miami's event, which is going to be at Vizcaya Museum and Gardens. Before we wrap up, Scott, what about you personally? Do you get to work on anything during all this? Do you some poetry?
The other 11 months out of the year, I try and carve out some time. In April, not so much. Although I just had a book come out last month. So
tell us about it real quick.
It's called Yate Veo, and it was published by University of Arkansas Press. So it's my first book of poems. So that was pretty exciting.
You finally, after all these years, you finally had the chance to sit down and actually do this.
Yeah.
You've been, you know, facilitating getting so much poetry into the city, and now you finally get to do some of your own. So we'll definitely put a link, by the way, up on that. Again, Scott Cunningham, founder of O Miami, the literary organization here in South Florida, bringing poetry and literature to our city. Scott, it's always a pleasure, man.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Lewis.
Thank you so much. Well, that's the program for today. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Lewis Hernandez. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll talk to you again on Monday.